Tom, where did you start with this score?
Where did I start? I started with evading Luca for about a year. And then I got a script. And then I met him in London and he was saying they're starting shooting and he was talking about this central dance piece called Volk. And that got me in sort of intrigued as to how it was an interesting challenge. And then I think my way in was the song Suspirium, because within the script there was this melancholy which I was really surprised about, not like a normal horror film at all. The stories and what he was trying to put across was not really to scare you. It was more than that, or different from that. Yeah, a weird form of darkness.
Is there a part of you that I suppose has to let go of yourself in this set of circumstances to begin?
You are in a different situation because you aren't... You're working to commission, you know? Every single thing that was written because someone asked me to, which was kind of nice. It was kind of a freeing thing because there's no sense of sort of my identity on it at all. It's, I'm whoever he wanted to be at that moment for whatever particular section of the film. You know, I went from having to write from a quartet to writing a weird synthesizer piece in 5/8 and 3 to writing for a choir in German.
What was it that particularly drew you about this project? Because you've never done it before, have you?
Something I could focus on in isolation, a way of finding a way into a studio that I'd built, weirdly. Forcing myself into a lot of rooms I'd never normally walk into, you know. But really, I kind of said yes, partly because he kept asking, and I was like, mate, you realise, you know, I've never done this before, right? And it didn't seem to bother Luca at all. So I'm like, okay.
Did you enjoy the element of seating yourself quite a long way outside your comfort zone?
Yes, very much. I mean, it was difficult. It was not easy. It wasn't like, I'm thoroughly enjoying being out of my comfort zone. It was much more like, what is going on? What am I doing? You know, I am so out of my depth. And then a little voice in my head going, ha ha. You know, but I don't know, in the end, by the time I got to like working with the LCO and doing the choral stuff and having Hugh, who conducts the LCO, helping me, because I can't read music, helping transcribe what I've written to a score. By the time I stood in Air Studios and watched the singers performing what I'd sketched out on a microphone, by that point I was like, all right, well, it's basically all, it's just music. It's whether it's on a score or whether it's scrolling from left to right on my computer, it's the same thing. It's all the same thing. I guess one of the big highlights was that for me, was like, understanding that not to be intimidated about it.
I suppose in that set of circumstances as well, you're very much reliant on your primary instinct, right?
You ain't got anything else. it was sort of turning certain elements of what I do right up. Like, it was more like drawing or painting than songwriting. Songwriting is you know, it's like a storytelling thing. It's a modulations, it's chords, it's this and this and this, and there was a lot of that, as you will hear or have heard, but there was also just making noises, just that thing I've always wanted to do. All those, you know, you do when you collaborate in the studio, there has to be a point, you're going in a certain direction with other people. When you're on your own, you don't necessarily have that. You have a remit, you have a place you want to get to. You know, you're looking for example, I'm looking for a way of finding this melody, taking it to somewhere it doesn't want to go, you know, spitting it out of a machine that doesn't understand that melody and seeing what it gives me back, things like that. Tinkering around with new toys that I didn't know how to use, you know, which is an essential part of all studio work, is that, like, don't read the manual, just plug it in thing, which was about 80% of the soundtrack, wasn't it, Sam?
Research.
You know, when you've got this thing coming up, you know you're going to be working on it for a while, so your radar goes out to things that you think will help. So there's a few records you pick along the way, and then you go back. I went back through like old Faust records and Can and stuff that was from that period, kind of. But it was kind of fun to really have an excuse to throw myself at stuff I would not normally throw myself, like Stockhausen and Pierre Henry and all that sort of thing, music that's assembled from other pieces, and really understand it more, identify with it more, because it's like it's a different medium, it's a different process, and it does send you to the extraordinary places. The bits that work, you know, for me are like incredible. I enjoyed the learning bit. I enjoyed the looking back at my knowledge from a different point of view, you know, rather than always coming to it from a songwriting place, which in itself has its limitations, because you are just... It's always... You can experiment for weeks, but it's got to fit back into wherever you were with the song and the arrangement and the nana. So 78% of it gets dropped. So I'm coming to it from the other end where... I'll just throw it on the song ever, whatever, it doesn't matter. Or, you know, it doesn't matter. It's all because I'm working someone else's idea and someone else's concept. What stunned me was the weird thing where, like, when we were putting the film together in the audio mix with at the same time, I was then looking back at all the stuff I'd done for it. Some of it was used, some not used. And starting to piece it together as its own thing and discover it was its own thing. It's like me responding to someone else's, you know, influence and ideas, but responding most of all to an atmosphere, an idea. Not that I can pin down quickly what that is, but there is a sense of, throughout the film, even though it's a horror film, I think it's more about people trying to chase death, trying to avoid death. And that's the thing that sort of stuck with me, and that's the sadness of that, you know.
Tell me a bit about how you were working. Were you getting rushes every day, new rushes, and you were writing as you were watching these?
I would like to pretend that's how it was. It was more sketchy than that. It would be weeks of banging my head against the wall, not getting anywhere. It was quite a drawn out thing. I could never really get away from it then, no matter what I was doing, you know, until it was done, which is the essence of any project, I guess, but this one in particular, because I was solely responsible. It never left my side.
How do you deal with a deadline?
Oh, well, I don't have them usually. It was a novel concept. I think early on in our career as professional musicians, we ditched the concept of deadlines. As soon as we made the record company any money, it was like, right, first thing that goes is deadlines. So you're just going to have to wait.
Your son is playing drums, oh, yeah? Isn't he? Noah, the record. How did it feel to involve the family?
It was great. I mean, it just seemed really natural because I hear him drumming all the time. I hear, you know, he's a great musician. And my daughter helped me with some of the artwork ideas as well. It's just, you know, they're in the house, so we're talking about it all the time. Part of me wants to protect him from that, but, like, yeah, he played the drums on it, you know, so I hope he's proud of that, you know.
Tell us a little bit about working with the London Contemporary Orchestra and the choir too, because there are some exquisite choral pieces on the record.
Yeah, it's exquisite for someone who's never done it before and is scratching the surface for what is possible. But they were great because they didn't come to it from any, they didn't look down on anything I was trying to do at all. Which you know, I think is why we work with them a lot, because they're totally open minded. They're not old school at all. You know, they work with so many different interesting people. Johnny Greenwood they work with as well. I quite like his stuff. He's pretty good. Hughes just was really helpful because I went to him and poor guy, he came round to my house and I played him kind of what I was doing, and even I was confused, but he just found a line in it and said, yeah, it's this line. I'm like, yeah, it was, that's what I meant, yeah.
I wanted to talk to you a bit about Sam's contribution as well, because obviously he's been with us all day in Maida Vale, messing around with loops and helping the engineers in the little control room.
I've
got desk.
Right, Sam.
Envy. Tell us about Sam's contribution to the record. What's he been up to?
So basically, it's a really easy way to describe this. Imagine like you're in a room for like 8 months. And in the course of that 8 months, you've tied yourself in so many knots, you can't find one thread that pulls out the other way from that thread. And eventually I just, you know, I called Sam, who works with Nigel, and I said, Sam, please help me untie these knots, because I don't know what any of these knots are anymore. And he came in and he just brought some clarity to everything and started saying, okay, we need to put this here now. And he did the really scary bit, which was when, it's all very well to do all this stuff, but then you have to go and you have to mix it within the film. Then you are sitting in a room competing with sound effects and speech and everything else. Sam was there for 2 months. Two long months. Yeah.
He's still speaking to you.
Yeah, I think so.
Come on now, my way.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your plan to tour America with Nigel and Sam. I know you've got US dates, live dates. What are you going to do out there?
Is some live mix and live visuals, electronic, with Tarek Barry, who's from Holland and Berlin. And he built this generating software, I wouldn't say self-generating software, but a controllable software that creates visuals. It's like a live painting kind of thing that's happening. So he's like one of the musicians. And Nigel basically is assembling and reassembling, recutting tracks that we've built, old tracks and stuff we're writing now. And I am doing vocal looping and keyboards and drum machines and more vocal looping and then just singing. And then it's just become a thing. It's become a live show in one sense. It is a live show. It's a performance. But it's not like one that, it's not what I've grown up with. I've grown up with standing there with a guitar and there's some guitar playing, but it's born out of lots of things. It's born out of like hanging out with Fly Low years ago when he was on tour with us and being in a situation where we couldn't get Atoms for Peace together, so we had to formulate another way of doing things. So we thought, we'll recut things and we'll do like a live mix, and then the live mix got more sophisticated and then we can improvise now. So Nigel will drop elements out, change elements, not bring things in here or here. Things can be random, things can make mistakes, and I'm having to try and remember the words and work out what the hell he's doing. It's really kind of unpredictable, and sometimes it's really easy, sometimes it's really difficult, sometimes it goes wrong. But it's an experiment, and we've committed to 4 or 5 weeks of it. We did one in Europe. It was kind of fun. It became a thing. Before that, we just dipped our toes in, and now it's like, okay, now we're on tour. Now we have to get it right. And there we're trying to finish the music of it to put out to the beginning of next year if we can.
So this is another element, really, of just kind of cutting the cord and letting go a little bit for you.
It's apps. I still struggle with it just because I'm supposed to have a guitar around my neck, but it's machines, you know. So it's machines, so it's absolutely terrifying because I'm convinced they're just going to turn on me at any moment. No, really. So that's why I just want... The hugest relief is like wandering off away from the machines and just, you know, going out front with a mic. I think another influence really for me was like the early days of watching Bjork when she... There was one time when we did, years ago, when we did the Tibetan Freedom concert, and she did her set with just two guys at the back and her doing vocals. And I thought, ooh, that looks really fun. You know, they're rebuilding the sounds there and then, you know, and I guess I'd always wanted to do that. And now I'm actually doing it, I'm terrified and want to run away. when it works, it's really great and it's getting better all the time, so...
Mm. Are you going to bring it to the UK? Will there be more shows?
I hope so. Yeah, next year, I hope so.
Can I ask you one final question?
No, I won't. What?
Are you happy?
I'm all right. Are you?
Yeah, I am today.
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm okay. I mean, I'm happy when I'm working. I'm happy when everybody's all right that I love. So I'm okay. Thank you.
Tom York, thank you so much.
Stand up.